As the U.S. news media was hyperventilating with minute-by-minute reports on the drama surrounding the Washington-made fiscal cliff crisis, an 11th-hour deal between the White House and Congress was reached in the first hours of the new year, averting across-the-board tax hikes. The agreement allowed the Bush tax cuts to expire for families making $450,000 a year or more, marginally raised the estate tax, and tax rates on capital gains and dividends. The legislation extended unemployment benefits for a year, while continuing the earned income tax credit, the child tax credit, and refundable tuition tax credits for 5 years. But the agreement deferred action for 2 months on the $109 billion in automatic domestic and Pentagon budget cuts, failed to address the debt ceiling that must be raised between February 15th and March 1st, and made no provision for dealing with the March 27th expiration of appropriation bills that fund the federal government. The lack of congressional action on these critical issues sets up at least 3 more fiscal cliff-type political showdowns that threaten to damage the nation's credit rating and/or shut down federal government operations. Many progressive activists and legislators were critical of the compromises made by the president that limited tax increases on the wealthy, taking $3.9 trillion in revenue off the table permanently. They worry that Republicans are now empowered to focus all future negotiations on budget cuts, rather than generating additional revenue. Your reporter spoke with Richard Eskow, a senior fellow with the Campaign for America's Future, who assesses the negative fallout from the fiscal cliff agreement between the White House and Congress that may pave the way for benefit cuts in Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid.
One of the big complaints about this deal is that the concessions are permanent on one side, but the cessation of hostilities is only temporary. So this leaves all sorts of battles yet to come, and on a tilted playing field, because if you look at the election results in November, Democrats won the presidency, and they won it on a progressive platform, no matter what they may say now, that included tax increases above $250,000, protecting Medicare and Social Security. They won on that platform. They won the presidency. They won the Senate, not only in numerical numbers, but overwhelmingly in the popular vote. And interestingly, they won the House of Representatives in the popular vote by more than 1 million votes. But because of gerrymandering, the Republicans got to keep the House. So now all the negotiation is being done on the terms of the party that lost, at least in the popular vote, all 3 branches of government. Now, Mitch McConnell in the Senate is saying, we're done talking about new revenue. Now the next discussions are about cuts and cuts only. So all of a sudden, the winning party with the winning majority and the winning mandate is on the defensive against those who want to do wildly unpopular things. They're also saying, the Republicans are also saying, with some sympathy within the White House, I might add, that they want to cut what they call entitlements, which is Medicare and Social Security benefits, which has nothing to do with our long-term deficit. Social Security doesn't contribute to the deficit, and Medicare's cost problems don't have to do with the benefits themselves, but with the problems with health care in this country. But that looks like that's going to be what's on the table. So this is, in my opinion, a very undemocratic, with a small d, basis for these negotiations going forward.
Now, when it comes to tax revenue, there's been a discussion that the Republicans declare any debate about more revenue is over, and everything from here on in is about budget cuts. But where can the president and Democrats, progressives more specifically, go with proposals to raise more revenue rather than cut programs for the working poor? What comes to mind are things like imposing a transaction tax on stock trades, closing loopholes for offshore tax havens and the like. Is any of that going to be on the table, you think?
Well, I would hope so, but I'm not as optimistic as I'd like to be, because we even have some people in the White House embracing this notion that we should have lower corporate tax rates and tax, quote-unquote, simplification to go along with it. But in the end of the day, the lobbyists and tax lawyers usually win those fights. Now, the president has sent ambiguous signals about taxing offshore income. We absolutely should do that. We should be pressing to do that. The financial transaction tax has not gotten a lot of play in Washington circles, a couple of people on the Hill have introduced it in a bill, but I think it's critically important for two reasons. One, it's a source of new revenue, and two, you know, it's a very, very tiny transactional tax on each buy-or-sell transaction that takes place, and that would do two things. One, it would raise revenue, and two, it would make our economy more stable.
It seems that President Obama in past negotiations has offered up both an increase in the eligibility age for Medicare from 65 to 67, as well as this proposal called Change CPI, which would effectively be a benefit cut for Social Security recipients by monkeying around with the way Social Security payments keep up with inflation. Do you want to talk about how your organization and other activist groups are working to put pressure on the White House not to go down this road?
First of all, this has been something that the White House has wanted to do for a long time. And, you know, this upsets certain supporters of the president and so on. But I personally was in a private, off-the-record meeting with a very, very senior administration official who said in 2009 that they wanted to cut these benefits as a way of proving to the international bond markets that we're serious, that sort of thing. But the international bond markets happen to love U.S. government bonds right now, so that's irrational, but I think they're committed to it. These cuts are opposed by 75% of Republican voters, according to our own polling, 76% of self-identified Tea Party members. People don't want this done, and if the president gives the Republicans cover to do it, two things will happen. One, it'll be catastrophic for all of us as we get older, and two, even from a purely pragmatic political point of view, it's going to decimate the Democratic Party, and the partisans who work for that party or support that party should be the most upset of all, because not only will it be bad policy, it'll be catastrophic politically. Campaign for America's Future and one of our affiliated groups that we work with, Social Security Works, and a number of other organizations are working very hard to prevent those things from happening.
That was Richard Eskow of the Campaign for America's Future. Find links to more analysis and commentary on the fiscal cliff agreement and its consequences on our Between the Lines website at btlonline.org.